We will call a subcommittee of the SR2 committee to order and taking some things out of order from what we have here. I'd like first of all to open a public hearing then on House Bill 2341. And I have Mr. Hemingway from the governor's office here to give us some information from the governor's office on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Roy Hemingway, the governor's salmon and energy policy advisor, and thank you for agreeing to take me out of order. I have a funeral I'm trying to attend in Portland this afternoon. House Bill 2341 allows the governor the authority to appoint the chair of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. He does not have this authority with respect to most boards and commissions, and I think possibly with respect to no other boards and commissions, with the exception of the Public Utility Commission, which of course is a full-time body. The governor would probably favor this legislation, but we want to make it clear that we don't think it really works, goes very far towards solving the problem with the commission and the department that we are all familiar with. The fact that there are management problems in the department, financial problems, and that there are concerns about the degree to which the department and the commission can relate successfully to the multiple constituencies, including the legislature and the governor's office and all the folks who are affected by the decisions of the Fish and Wildlife Commission and department. The governor feels quite strongly that Senate Bill 49, which is the bill that allows him to appoint the director of the Fish and Wildlife Department, is the strongest tool available for addressing those concerns about the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the commission. And so he has favored that bill, and he hopes that the House will act on it favorably, as has the Senate so far. Again, I don't think the governor would have any objection to this bill. But he doesn't feel that it would solve the problems that we have identified, and that we favor that the governor would have the authority to appoint the director, as Senate Bill 49 would allow. We want to make clear that the governor believes that commissions are policy-making bodies for their departments. He sees that as the role of the Fish and Wildlife Commission, as the policy-making body. But with respect to administration of a department, he thinks that some accountability up into the executive branch is appropriate, and that generally commissions are not well suited to exercise that accountability when a department gets into trouble. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Roy. Representative Lee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe if Senate Bill 49 is to pass, that this may be difficult to pass this bill, because then that would give the governor not only the choice of the chair, but also the director, which might be heavy on authority. So I would think that if we were possibly to hold this one to make sure the other one passes, then we might be in good shape.
Roy, I think not a question, I think, as much as some observation here. We are all certainly aware that we've had some really significant problems in relationship to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and its interaction with the governor's office and with the legislature. It isn't the purpose of this committee to try to identify blame. There may be enough of that for everybody to have a little peace and not feel offended or left out. But it is what we are trying to do, what we're looking for, I think, is to look at all of the avenues that we might have to try to increase the communication between the department and the various branches, and this was one of the suggestions that was brought forward, and therefore the reason for having the hearing on it and trying to determine whether this is a viable option, whether it's something the governor's office would like to have, and where, in fact, the of course, the commission is at on it. I believe it would be a mistake as far as the people of the state of Oregon if we kind of stuck our head in the sand and didn't address this issue in this session of the legislature. So this is, as you are aware, I'm sure, merely one piece in a puzzle that we're trying to get at on this issue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you, Bill. At this point, we'd close the public hearing on 2341, and we would also open the committee, full committee, for SR2 on this day, March 9th. And at this time, we would like to open the work session on House Bill 2683. And I believe Louise Soliday from the governor's office is being invited for testimony regarding a couple of issues that came up in the last meeting we had on this bill. Good afternoon, Louise.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Louise Soliday, the governor's assistant for natural resources. I got to listen in on part of your hearing the other day on this bill and wanted to come clarify a couple of things and try and respond to a couple of questions and issues that came up in the course of the discussion about this bill. First of all, let me step back. A little history on how this ecosystem restoration project that the Corps is pursuing came about. A couple of years ago, Congress added to the Corps' general authorization statutes to the things that they already have authorization for, navigation, flood control, those sorts of things, added another category of ecosystem restoration. And so across the nation, various core districts have been coming forward to Congress and pursuing ecosystem restoration projects along with all of the other kinds of projects that they have traditionally pursued. In the case of this particular project for which we're seeking cost share, the Senator Wyden got a $100,000 appropriation from Congress to do a scoping study related to ecosystem restoration opportunities in the Lower Columbia Estuary. And he did that because we had the Lower Columbia River Estuary program up and running, which is the bi-state program between Washington and Oregon with our many partners in the basin and with the Environmental Protection Agency, and was looking to get resources, federal resources, into the basin to try and help with that effort and help to scope out the kinds of projects that might be available to begin to restore the estuary between the mouth and Bonneville Dam. So this cost share is to do the second phase of what the Corps and Senator Wyden have proposed, and that is to do the feasibility study. And the Corps process, the federal process for Corps projects generally is they do a scoping study, they do a feasibility study, and then they implement projects based on what they find in the feasibility phase of the project. So this cost share is cost share to do the feasibility phase of the ecosystem restoration project that's been proposed by the Corps. It is separate and distinct from any mitigation that will be required as a part of the channel deepening project. The channel deepening project is about, I think there's a new timeline that's about to unfold that will cause the Corps to go through biological opinion, Section 7 consultation with the services again, go through 401 certification with DEQ, go through the coastal zone consistency they have to do with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and then all of the permits and authorizations they also need from the state of Washington. Whatever comes out at the end of that process in terms of terms and conditions for the biological opinion, 401 certification, coastal zone consistency, will have its own mitigation associated with it that will need to be paid for by the federal parties and the co-sponsors the channel deepening project. And so there will be another set of activities that will have to go on that will be directly associated with channel deepening. This ecosystem restoration project is separate and distinct from channel deepening and is really an effort to try and identify opportunities for restoration, given that the estuary program plan calls for restoration of habitat and wetlands and tidal marshlands in the lower estuary. This is an effort to try and identify the opportunities to do that in the basin. One of the questions that Representative Cruz raised at the hearing was the possibility of using OWEB funds. OWEB does not currently have, nor is it proposed to have in its budget, any lottery funds that can be used for this purpose. This biennium, the lottery funds under Measure 66 on the operations side, which is the piece that you'd have to look to for these kinds of resources, are fully allocated either to OWEB for its own staff, or for Watershed Council support grants, or for support to Soil and Water Conservation District technical assistance staff that they've got, or to other agencies for agency programs who are implementing the Oregon plan. So there are no lottery funds in this current biennium's budget that can be used for this purpose. There are proposed in the next biennium budget federal funds, the money that we are getting from the National Marine Fisheries Service from the Pacific Salmon Recovery Fund, that are the funds that could be used for things like study and assessment and monitoring, those sorts of things. Unfortunately, federal funds cannot be used to match these federal funds for the Corps. So the funding pot that OWEB has available to it next biennium are funds that are not eligible for cost share under this particular project. You need non-federal funds. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Leonard.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I hope you appreciate that state agencies testified and said that the two projects were tied.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leonard, and that's why I wanted to come here today to try and help clarify. There is some confusion. There's actually yet a whole other third effort going on in the estuary, and there is some confusion about what is tied to deepening and what is not. And the biological opinion that was initially done did make a link to the estuary plan and what it called for, and I think as this new biological opinion work goes forward, they will separate that and make that distinction because it created all sorts of confusion about which projects were linked to channel deepening and which ones were not. This project is not linked to channel deepening.
Another question, if I could.
Representative Leonard.
And I understand that you said that the channel deepening estuary restoration projects would be separate and distinct from this, but what... there isn't any analogy that can be drawn with the highway being torn up 1 week and some work being done and then 3 weeks later being torn up again for a different set of projects and being repaved again. This is not something that could be coordinated so that both of these projects were done at the same time and the port could pay for, saving us some general fund dollars. I mean, you said they're separate and distinct, but they're both estuary restoration projects. Are they in the same general area? Are they related enough that they could be paid for and tied to what the port is doing in terms of deepening the channel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leonard, this work is currently on a faster timeline than the channel deepening project is. So I think this work is slated to go forward before we even know what the mitigation is on channel deepening that is going to be required. And I do think in the case of at least what it appears National Marine Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are headed towards in terms of biological opinion, they will have very specific mitigation requirements that will be tied to channel deepening based on what they think are the quantifiable effects of channel deepening on the estuary. And so they will have some specific recommendations for things that will need to be done. There is a whole set of work that's already been identified to be done in the estuary, assuming for a moment there is no channel deepening project. The estuary is in a degraded condition. There is a set of actions that has been called for in the estuary plan, and this study, this feasibility phase, is to help identify the opportunities to begin that work.
Okay, and one last question, if I
yes.
could. When we get to the point that there are other studies being done for the purpose of channel deepening and estuary projects will have to occur, who is going to pay for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leonard, this body will have some participation in that discussion. I expect that the ports will participate in that, will probably be a local sponsor of those activities since they are the proponents for the channel deepening project along with the two states. But there will be a, I think, a direct relationship in terms of the ports' willingness and responsibility in terms of cost sharing on those things that are associated with channel deepening. This particular project, this is sort of trying to address the collective, the cumulative effects of a lot of activities that have gone on that have affected the estuary health over a long period of time,
okay,
which is why we pursued this avenue of funding for this particular project.
Representative Lee.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a group like Watershed Council called the Lower Estuary Working Group. Is that group supporting this outcome?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, the lower it is now called the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program Implementation Committee, and they are responsible for overseeing implementation of the comprehensive plan that was developed by the Management Committee previously, and they are supportive of this effort. In fact, the Estuary Program has been talking to the Corps. The Corps is a partner in that implementation committee, have been working directly with the Corps about how to use this feasibility study to help advance the plan that's been developed.
Great. Thank you.
Sir.
Representative Cruz.
I apologize for being late. I was in the speaker's office.
Uh-oh.
Name dropper. Name dropper.
Sure, is that like being in the principal's office?
sometimes, yeah.
Exactly. All right, Carolyn.
Being a majority party wouldn't be quite the same as if Representative Leonard was in there. But we can assume.
Yeah.
The questions about why this fund is not coming out of our web, I'm wrong?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, I addressed your question earlier, but now that you're here, let me do it again.
Okay.
The only funds that OWEB, in this biennium, there were no lottery funds available in the OWEB budget for this kind of work, and proposed in next biennium's budget is the use of federal funds for these sorts of things, assessment monitoring, which is what this would fall under. And federal funds cannot be used to match federal funds under the cost share program. So that's why we looked at the lottery bonding opportunity as the best vehicle for cost sharing on this particular project, because the funds that were available in OWEB's budget were also federal funds, which we can't use.
So we aren't using any Measure 66 dollars for monitoring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, that's correct. Let me recall what happened. Well, we're not. That's correct. We are not.
We had discussions ad infinitum as to what was capital and what was not. And I thought we had come to kind of the agreement that continuing functions of projects were part of capital improvements.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, within the definition of capital expenditures, which is the 65% pot of the lottery funds, it does not refer to monitoring associated. It refers to technical assistance related to design and implementation of those projects. Even if there was a provision in that definition of capital expenditures that said monitoring associated with a particular project, this feasibility study is a much broader assessment of the opportunities for restoration. It's not actually doing projects yet. And so you would need to look to, the 35% on the operations side for Measure 66, all of that money got appropriated either to OWEB for their staff or to other state agencies for other purposes. And so at the end of last legislative session, we realized there was zero money available for grants related to monitoring, assessment, outreach, and education, the non-capital portion of what OWEB has historically funded. So there was $3.7 million of general fund put into the Christmas tree bill at the end of the session. For next biennium, we are proposing to use the federal funds that come in to OWEB through the National Marine Fisheries Service to fill that gap in terms of the monitoring and assessment money, because once again, lottery funds are total, the lottery funds are either dedicated to on-the-ground projects or to OWEB staffing or agency programs related to the Oregon plan.
Okay. Are we still expecting $9 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, we have a confirmed $9 million for this federal fiscal year. I don't think the state has received it yet, but that is in line. And as I understand the Bush administration budget framework, we haven't seen the details yet, but the framework assumes a continuation of that funding. And whether that'll make it through Congress, we don't know, but it appears that there's at least a proposal to continue it.
Ms. Chair, just one more kind of a comment, Louise. I mean, you know, monitoring is such a vital part of any project. I think it's still worth pursuing some way to get that included in the definition of capital. I mean, it's
President Cruz, having served with you on that committee, it is my recollection that this topic was discussed in a kind of generic, not specific to the Columbia River estuary, but
right.
And it's my recollection that there was a committee agreement and buy-off on some of this being part available as part of the capital construction issue, and so. I share your concern with that, and I may have to go back and review my notes on some of those issues. But this is probably a topic that we need to pursue in a different form with the governor's office.
All right, Mr. Chair, and I agree with that. I guess just a statement for the record that if there's something that appears to be a good idea, and we didn't quite get everything we wanted one time, I don't think we should give up on it. So,
thank you. Thank you.
Just a comment that I'm just saddened that this bill, this session, Representative Cruz and I could agree on.
You're no longer able to agree.
I was in the state of mind he normally is. I was confused about his meaning. I agreed with it. I should have known something was wrong.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Get off of this frivolous.
Right. At such time as we shall conclude, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to move this bill.
Representative Lee, we are going to hold this bill yet.
Oh, okay.
Hold it over, and I do appreciate your consideration and other considerations here, that you're comfortable with where we're at now is with the bill. The problem is that the good representative from Corvallis did raise some questions in the last session. They were very good questions. They require amendments. And the further we get into that particular issue, colleagues, the more we realize that there is some need for some other tweaking, if you wish, of this bill. And since time is not of the essence as far as the Ways and Means Committee, which is where we're referring it to, we want to get those amendments right before we bring it back to move it out. The chair prefers not to deliberately move bills out that are not fine-tuned. So we will be waiting for our legislative council to provide us with those amendments, and we're working in that line, and you'll be brought abreast of it as quickly as we have them. Okay? At this point, we close the work session then on House Bill 2683, and would like to open an informational meeting on the Willamette Restoration Initiative. And we have Rick Bastash, the executive director of the WRI, here, and I believe you have with in front of you today the executive summary or the strategy, I guess maybe is that a better word, of the WRI that they'll be going through. We do have a little time for this, Rick, so we would like to not go beyond anywhere our appointed time, but we'd like to be, you know, make sure that the committee is satisfied with everything they're hearing on it. So with that, please.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, I'm Rick Bastash, Executive Director of the Willamette Restoration Initiative. And with me today, I'm pleased to have board members John McDonald and John Miller, who I hope could say just a couple words to the committee about their experience with putting together this Willamette Restoration Strategy. Before you, you do have something that you've seen before in a different form put into a binder for you, namely the strategy overview, which is essentially chapter one of our entire Willamette Restoration Strategy. Chapter 10 had been distributed to you before, which is the detailed recommended action set with task timelines and responsibilities listed. And then in addition, because we were able to hand it out to those of you who are able to attend our strategy kickoff on February 21st, we have put together an advanced copy of what the entire report would look like, though technically the it's still at the printers and we expect it back in a week or two when it would be made available to the public and to the rest of the members of the Legislative Assembly. And we're pleased to be able to return and talk to the committee in more detail about this Willamette Restoration Strategy. I think you may recall that the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board of Directors was charged under executive order with developing this strategy that are the board's recommendations to the legislature and the governor on the content of the Willamette Basin Supplement for the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, with a particular focus on fish and wildlife habitat, water quality, floodplains, but all within the context of population growth and human habitation. So hopefully a very balanced approach, a long-term approach to resolving some of the issues we have in the Willamette Basin. If I could, just very briefly, I'd like to go over some of the highlights of the strategy, at least as we see them here from the initiative. And starting with, it's the first time that an Oregon Plan supplement has been recommended on the basis of a broad-based citizen panel. And that's been something that's very new and something we hope you agree is something very successful. Heretofore, in pulling together parts of the Oregon Plan, it was largely a function of the governor's office, state agencies, with federal participation. I think we've kind of turned that on its head by having a citizen board, 26 members chaired by OSU President Paul Risser, folks like the Johns here from all walks of life throughout the basin, coming together and pulling together, learning to work together to come up with a very focused set of recommendations to holistically address the environment and economy of the Willamette Basin. These 26 members worked together for a couple years and actually found common ground. And the board was able to make very strong recommendations on some important fundamentals. We focused on 27 critical actions, four key recommendations, a couple dozen, in other words, out of the thousands of things that could potentially be done. The board was able, I think, to sift through that detail and come up with the critical actions, at least in its eyes, to recommend to the governor and legislature. The approach is one of landscape, taking a look at the landscape, working with a watershed. We almost made recommendations on the Oregon Plan for watersheds and salmon rather than the other way around, believing that it takes a watershed to raise a salmon, and that our recommendations are not by agency or by program. Rather, they're intended to address all aspects of the functioning of the watershed and cut across jurisdictions with the help of, by the way, of many state and federal agency folks, watershed councils, local governments, and the like. We think that this is the kind of framework that will function over the long term, allow people to come to agreement, and to allow us to address a host of issues from water quality and species recovery, and not just salmon and steelhead, but other species as well. The reason we believe that this is a meaningful framework is, for the first time, there's an actual map of where our conservation efforts, we believe, should first be applied. The map is prominently displayed in the middle of the overview document there. You can zoom in on it quite a way. We had to shrink it to put it in the document. It needs to be taken on the road and ratified by the folks in the basin, but it's a very critical first step in prioritizing our restoration investments. We think it's a great framework because it provides for a new system of accountability. The board was careful to take the advice of a science panel for the State of the Environment report formed under the Oregon Progress Board, and there's environmental indicators that have been thought through by the science panel that we're seeking to apply within this basin and wanting to talk to folks about not just how do we know whether or not we're making progress in these complex environmental issues, but what, how do we define that program, progress? What's our definition for success? Where do we want to be 20 years out? Where do we want to be 50 years out? We have some suggestions about what those targets might be, but we very much believe they need to be taken on the road and verified with decision makers like yourselves, county commissions, city councils, and the general public. For the first time, there are detailed task timelines and responsibilities. There is a planning framework, a recipe for how we could get from point A to B. This board has no legal authority. We're not saying this has to be absolutely done just this way, but we had to deliver a complete package, we thought, to the legislature and the governor to say, yes, this is the sequence of how this could occur. This is who would be involved. These would be the costs. So we've detailed out these actions in the hope that it would demonstrate that these are very feasible and very important. We also worked carefully and created new communication networks, worked with the incorporated cities and the urban communities in the basin through the Willamette Urban Watershed Network. We established, helped establish a toll-free information line, have a website, and believe that the function of this regional body has been to provide a service, to provide a function that otherwise hasn't been here, to develop a holistic recommendation for the entire Willamette, and that hasn't been done before. And this regional body, by the way, is not by itself in the state. There are other regional bodies, and we're developing some information on those. Should the committee be interested today or at some other point, we'd be happy to share that information to indicate that this is representative, we think. What we're doing is representative of what a lot of other groups in the state are interested in as well. We hosted the Willamette Urban Watershed Network, established the toll-free line, and sponsored a basin-wide inventory on conservation and restoration programs. So we hope we've done our homework. We hope that homework has resulted in a very important document for the basin. And those are the highlights as I see them. And it, with your permission, Chair Jensen, I'd like to invite our two board members to say a couple words.
Please.
John Miller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. John D. Miller, my wife Susan, and I live here in Salem, and I kind of cover both ends of the spectrum in terms of why I care about water. I'm president of a urban design and development firm here in the Valley. We build homes and do office buildings in industrial areas, and I'm also president of Mahonia Vineyards and Nursery, and we grow ornamental and native plants and graft grapevines, and our markets are from the east coast of the U.S. to China. A great deal of what happens in the Willamette is directly going to affect our businesses, both urban and rural, as well as me personally. I grew up on the north of the Yam, and I'm very pleased that the approach the WRI report has taken in the sense that it looks at the watershed as a whole and doesn't just look at the water between the banks. And I think for the first time there's been an approach that says cities affect rural areas and vice versa, and much of the land that is critical to fixing the watershed and keeping it healthy is privately owned. I own a lot of land on tributaries in mainstream Willamette. We treat those lands well, but it's very frustrating to do something on our land and then see a city next door do something really stupid, or vice versa, I'm sure, in their view. I chaired the governor's Willamette Basin Task Force, which was a precursor to the WRI, and we made several recommendations, most all of which, in fact, have been, I think, very well implemented by the WRI's report. It does treat the watershed as a whole. And perhaps most importantly, it looks at the issue of a strategy. We've got over 100 jurisdictions in the basin. We've got farm, forest, industrial, how do we meld those all together and use the limited resources we have wisely in terms of a strategy? What happens on the North Santa Yam affects the main stem. We've got watershed councils on both, but what ties them together? What ties our efforts in Portland to those in Eugene? So the strategy is a critical issue, and I think is very well laid out in this report. Another thing our task force said was that this needs to be an ongoing process, and WRI recognizes that well. The Clean Water Act isn't going to go away. NMFS isn't going to go away, no matter what we feel about them. The impending growth in the valley that causes tension between agriculture and urban issues, that's not going to go away. It's going to get worse, probably. And we need an ongoing entity to deal with that issue that's a table that, in my view, has no authority other than the wisdom of its recommendations to the legislature and the governor and the people. And the last recommendation we made at task force level was to broaden the scope in terms of the number of and the type of stakeholders that sat at the WRI table. And that was done very effectively. The then president of the Farm Bureau sits next to a Weyerhaeuser vice president, next to an environmental group chair or leader. This group has worked very well. Dr. Risser has been a wonderful leader. Rick is an amazing person and a great resource. And I guess my bottom line is that there's a window here, and what we need the most is the legislative advice and counsel in this process, and to look at us and say what you like about us, what don't you like about us. If you want to have a totally new body, that's great. I'd be happy to give you my resignation. I've been at this too long, but don't let's start over. So I'm hoping that the legislature will take this opportunity to participate and help us do what needs to be done in this valley, not just one side of the aisle or the other, the governor's office or the legislature. We are one community, and as they say, we're all downstream.
Could I interrupt just a moment and welcome a group of five young ladies who are honorary pages, I think, here in the Capitol today, and they're visiting, and hopefully they will get some information about how the system works from the committee hearing we're having here. So welcome to our next. Thank you.
John McDonald. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. My name is John McDonald. I am a hazelnut grower in Hillsboro, Oregon, and previously a wheat farmer in Pendleton, of the Missouri Gulf. I want to echo one thing in particular to begin what John Miller said about Rick Bastash. He's probably one of the finest staff persons I've ever worked with as far as giving support to a board. This was a tough board to work with. We had a lot of different opinions. At times it was a very frustrating and discombobulating process, but at the same time it was the kind of thing that was necessary and needed to deal with tough issues. My involvement in support of the Willamette Restoration Initiative is based on four values, and I'd like to expound on those values for just a few moments, in particular my experiences and perspective as a farmer and a landowner. As a member of WRI, I was the representative of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, but my perspective was also influenced by being a director of a local Washington County Soil and Water Conservation District and the chair of the Tualatin River Watershed Council. I also had the opportunity to be one of the members of the advisory commission to the Unified Sewerage Agency. So I'm trying to look at this from a city point of view as well as a rural point of view. The first value that I hold very dearly is locally led. I fervently believe that planning and implementation of almost all problems and programs should start at the smallest plot of land possible and build upward. So in my own case, that starts with a 100-acre filbert farm, then it moves to my neighborhood and the people around me, is to figure out how we're interacting with each other, then to a watershed, a county, a basin, maybe even to a region, the state and federal levels. And I think that was the strong point of the WRI, because we each represented some little piece of that. We all started at our home base. The forest owner was talking about the trees on his land. The person who was representing the sewage agency was talking about the pipes that went under the city where he worked, or she worked. And I also believe that state and federal governments, and this may sound a little strange, are here to serve and empower citizens and local groups to address the very common problems and some common goals. And that means to help us get a common vision and to help equip us to individually as well as collectively do what the common good says should be done. So local decision-making, local planning and implementation, and even control are central to my perspective. I think this is a part of what we tried to do as a WRI. We started with essentially a blank slate. We didn't assume a lot of problems, and we weren't trying to react to somebody else. This board did something that's very difficult to do, and that is to actually write a plan from scratch. Boards normally react to what somebody else has done, but this was a creative process. That was part of why the frustration and some of the debates went on into the night. So we had a determination of problems we call resource concerns. There was a prioritization process, and it's a forum for discussion, understanding, involvement, consensus, and finally an outlet for action. I think the most important thing we focused on was the delivery system, and that's something which I'll comment a little bit in a second. I think we built a plan and an implementation strategy as a way to try to get the Oregon plan to the ground. There's too much, I think, in our thinking that the Oregon plan has been an ideal, a set of values, and some statements about what state and federal agencies can do, but it's had a hard time getting all the way down to the ground. At least what WRI has done is try to get it one step closer to where the action really takes place. The second principle I believe in so strongly is citizen involvement. The greatest potential, in my opinion, for meeting water quality and quantity goals are for the citizens to individually and communities do what we've all decided will bring about the best results. But what the people do not support probably isn't going to happen. And my own experience is that enforcement does not bring about lasting change in behavior and values. And I think that's what WR was about. It is about citizen involvement. It was starting out with somebody who that I have a particular point of view, and I'm willing to share it, and I'm willing to sit down and compromise to come up with a common plan of action. The third principle is kind of an unusual one, and maybe you sound a little strange, but developing the delivery system is as important as developing the product. Every good business knows that you can develop a wonderful product, but if you can't get it to a consumer, it's not going to do you a bit of good, and you're going to go bankrupt. The Oregon plan, in my opinion, is a product. Delivering that product called implementation is the real issue. Unless that happens, it is another colossal waste of time. So I obviously am concerned about what finally arrives, believe it or not, at my farm, and also how it gets there. I have a bias since I used to work in state government in another state. I found that we were very good at developing front-end and top-down products and programs, and we were great at starting things. We weren't necessarily as good at seeing what happened at the other end. So we have to ask the question, is it vital what we start at the bottom and plan up? I think it is. What needs to get to the final consumer, the person like me out on the ground? In what form or shape does it come? What will attract us? For the Oregon plan, we are the consumers. And as a landowner and farmer, these issues are important to me because you can dream up all the lofty goals and programs possible, but what do they look like when they get to the people? Are they acceptable, doable, feasible, appropriate, or even affordable? These are some of the kind of issues that WRI started trying to examine and come up with some answers. And I think the important thing is that we recognize that stakeholder groups are consumers, and therefore it's important, you know, how we deliver the product. The Oregon plan is, in my opinion, a very good beginning, but it's not a finished product. It's an evolving thing. Right now, it's probably top-heavy. It's probably too fragmented. Its focus is fairly narrow since it focuses on state and federal agencies, and it doesn't yet function as an integrated system. And I think that's the important thing. Are we looking at this from the point of view of a system operation design? We're not there yet. Obviously, we're all working at it, but I think the WRI is at least one step to try to get for the Willamette Basin the beginnings of something that gets down to the ground and broadens out the focus to include we, the consumers, as well as the state and federal groups. The last focus is another one that's kind of strange, and that is perspective, the last value. As a farmer, I look at a plot of land and ask what the current situation is, what I want it to be, or what it should be, or what it has to be, and how I get there. But focusing on a place, a specific location, even a piece of ground as large as the Willamette Basin, is very different than looking at things through policies and special interests. Governments and state agencies have a tendency to look from the policies to the ground. We have a tendency to look from the ground to the politics and to the policies. The WRI focus was to look at a place and to start with the view of what we saw when we took a view of what the Willamette Basin looks like. It is even a different perspective than what can be seen from a single watershed within that basin. We saw things that single watershed groups would not see in the same way, and definitely differently than what state and federal agencies would see. And it is an important perspective that state and federal agencies, in some cases, just don't get. Well, there are several factors that I think were important about what happened in the WR experience. One is a critical issue about coordination. And I have some maybe unusual views about that. Being on a watershed council and also a conservation district, at times we are too small to make much of an impact individually. And it's interesting to me that when local groups want to have an impact, such as at the state level, they have to organize into regional or state groups or associations to do so. And I think that's one of the difficulties we're having right now, is trying to figure out how to coordinate the state agencies and the federal agencies. That's one thing that WRI looked into. So this chapter 10, there's a whole lot of stuff in there about what state agencies can do, what federal agencies can do, what local agencies can do, what soil water conservation districts can do, watershed councils can do, and so forth, and tries to pull it around the actions that need to take place rather than the people to take those actions. Second is citizen involvement. I think that's one of those things where everybody talks about it, but most of us end up being responders. The classic phrase is, now we need to send this out for political, for public review. Well, this was a case where we started to create the action ourselves, and I think that's what's important. It's interesting that now the state and federal agencies are reviewing what we created. It's almost like we flip-flopped the process there. One of the questions that has come up is a tough one, and that is this another layer of bureaucracy? I don't see it as such. I don't think this is a bureaucracy. If it continues, if WRI continues, certainly hope that it will, and I certainly think it will never become a bureaucracy. I would personally ask that you don't change the structure to a commission or something like that. Its greatest asset is its citizen stakeholder status. Yet admittedly, that is also its greatest challenge, since those types of things are difficult to maintain without status, without legislative support, without a lean but mean staff, and even adequate funding. But I think we have a good starting point. The implementation is going to be the key. We can't do a whole lot at a local level, a single watershed, other than pay attention to the concerns of that watershed. The state actually is in a mix itself. It is part of what needs to be coordinated, and therefore is probably sometimes the least able to do the coordination and figure out how to do it. Federal governments and agencies might even listen to a larger group such as a WRI than they would a single watershed or a conservation district. And I firmly believe that multi-stakeholder partnerships are a promising vehicle for change. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, I strongly echo the comments that were made and support this project. Attending several watershed councils in my area, as well as the area meetings of the soil and water districts, I see that we're really fragmented in the Willamette. And part of the problem is we have 28 watershed councils and 12 soil and water districts and about 24 water supplier local governments. And this has been one way to bring those groups of folks together and really develop a strategy that looks at each of the three sub-basins and the whole basin. And I would hope that we can find some way to further this, because I think it will be very beneficial to everybody working on projects on the ground.
Thank you, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to commend you all on your, years of work, would be right. And certainly a number of folks in Corvallis were very intimately involved, and I can appreciate the effort that you went through, and thank you very much. And certainly as being a resident of the Willamette Valley, I have no qualms about this, and you know, high time it needed to be done, and support it fully. I'm wondering what type of problem you think it's going to be to bring the entire state together to focus on this problem and ensure that it doesn't fracture into a Willamette Valley versus the rest of Oregon concern.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, and Representative Worth, I guess I'd like to start to answer that question by suggesting that in one way that fracturing is already being prevented by some of the work of regional groups around the state already. And in wanting to satisfy my curiosity about are other areas of the state grappling with the same sort of issues, we find that they are. And they, whether you look at the Grand Ronde Model Watershed effort in Northeast Oregon, or the Tillamook Performance Partnership in Tillamook Bay and Tillamook Estuary, the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program, Upper Klamath Basin Working Group, the Rogue Basin Coordinating Council, Deschutes Resources Conservancy. I think you're seeing a common denominator statewide of an interest to be integrative, to do the Oregon thing, pull together through largely, I think most all of them have citizen bases to go forward and say, how can we work together? Kind of work regionally, work locally, but maintain a bigger picture of Oregon in our minds. I think the biggest assist in not having this sort of potentially decay into kind of warring regions has to do with better understanding our regional efforts and better supporting them, I think, to see if we can't act together communally to grow the pie of funding that's needed to better understand how we best allocate existing resources. Otherwise, I think there may be a risk of internecine warfare. But we don't have that yet, and we don't have to have it. So I think the seeds have already been planted for good regional coordination and regional cooperation. So I guess my hope would be that the Willamette could be a player statewide in that common effort, and that we all pay attention to some of the really neat things that are happening across the landscape in Oregon. And I don't know if that gets quite to your question or not, but I guess I'd offer it up to our board members here, too.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Worth, if I were a landowner in another area, I would definitely be wanting the same kind of thing that Willamette Valley has for myself. I see absolutely no reason why this type of process cannot be replicated elsewhere. I think part of the difficulty has been the way in which it was initiated. It looks like maybe the Willamette Valley was getting special concern because of economic or, you know, importance or something like that. But I think that's a false kind of thing to hang a hat on. I think, frankly, every single basin is different. What we have learned here, we've learned some things that apply statewide. They're not limited to the Willamette. Some of our recommendations, frankly, ought to be implemented statewide, not just in the Willamette. But the same thing, there's some concerns for the basins around Malheur County. They're quite different from the ones in Washington County. There are different things in Umatilla and the Deschutes, you know, someplace than in Douglas County. So I think it's important that the whole state looks at the idea that what we have learned here and what we've tried to develop is replicable.
All right, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate those comments. And I think that we all, in all the basins throughout the state, we realize that there are needs, albeit different needs, but certainly needs no one more important than the other. And I would just like to be interested as this progresses to hear of any specific legislation coming from the WRI that we might enact to help this process of making sure that it doesn't fracture into a look like our need is more important than anyone else's.
Chairs Leonard and Lee, if I could respond directly to Representative Worth's interest, we have been working with Representative Lee and Representative Backlund on House Bill 3638, which does intend to provide a vehicle for discussing the benefits statewide of a regional conservation body approach in these matters. And so that would be certainly one that would be very appropriate to continue to look at, and we'd like to work with the committee on.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess I'm going to ask a three-part question. What is the next step? How can the legislature help? And how can we make sure that this isn't one of those studies that's left on a shelf somewhere?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, great questions. Thank you. The next step is this. I think talking more with the legislature and appropriate committees, making sure that this document gets to decision makers and residents in the basin to verify that we're on the right track. The way the legislature can help is, I think, to apply its collective intelligence to exactly that. Is this what's needed in the Willamette? Are we taking liberties, in terms of our position statewide? And most of all, I think, to be thinking of this in terms of a partnership. I don't think I have to tell this committee that, again, the way we were started perhaps gave the appearance of leaving the legislature out of the picture. That wasn't intended. I think it may have been the impression. And quite frankly, we've been suffering from that ever since. We absolutely need legislative partnership, legislative participation, some legislative acknowledgement of standing for groups like this to, when they bring recommendations forward, that they have some sort of hearing. Otherwise, we do risk issuing our recommendations to the wind and adding this relatively skinny binder to a lot of fat binders on a lot of shelves. It's not what we want to have happen. And I might say that if we do get the cooperation of the legislature and continue to get the cooperation of the governor's office and maintain some sort of regional body board, the like of which we have now, that's what's going to make the difference. In some ways, we kind of ask a lot of a board to roll up its sleeve and invent a plan. That's not what boards do normally, I don't think, but this one did a great job. That's the hardest thing now that is in large part done, and we hope you concur with the recommendations. If you do concur, though, you've got a board ready to launch. I mean, these people are sold, they're influential, they're truly a blue ribbon panel, and what's going to keep this from sitting on the shelf is them and you.
Follow up, please. So what is it we need to do?
Well, if I might, in my view, the next step is we've got a good strategy, and it needs to be implemented. And there's a myriad of things that agencies can do, and even federal agencies can do, but this strategy needs some guiding in its implementation. WRI can continue as an entity authorized and funded by the governor through his executive order, or it can be funded and guided by both the legislature and the governor. And the funding is minimal that we're requesting. We're part of the governor's budget, and there may be other vehicles, but I would hope you folks would be able to watch that and say, we either like or we don't like the level of funding. We like or we don't like the structure that's being recommended in this document. But there's a kind of a magic moment here. I hate to say that, and I also say that another trite phrase that the past is water under the bridge. And are we going to move forward, or are we going to start over sometime down the road? And guys like Rick don't come along every day. He'll be snapped up instantly, paid better, given a better staff in terms of size, not quality. We've kind of housed him around in various squirreled away places, and what these folks have produced is amazing. And somehow we do have to solve the problem you mentioned.
Mr. Vice Chair and Representative, I'd like to give my viewpoint on a couple of your questions. What you can do and what the next step is to validate this process through legislative action. It's been mentioned several times before that there's been a disconnect between, the fact that this was under executive order and wasn't under legislative action. I think it's time to bury that now, frankly. We want you to validate what we have done and that we exist as an ongoing planning agency. The second thing we need is enough funds to keep Rick Bashdash. And by the way, the rest of the people state hands off. You can't have him. The third thing is to allow us to continue to work and to make recommendations and so forth for the implementation. Some of us didn't buy into this thing to write a document. we bought into this thing because it was a chance for us to speak our mind, to make some changes and some directions that were necessary. We're still here wanting to do that. We still want to operate as a board, continuing to look at things. Frankly, we're now at the point we're getting down to the, we're able to handle the tough questions. We're getting to the point where we're starting to deal with some of the issues that need to come up, and frankly, some that have been postponed because we weren't ready as a board to deal with those things yet. I think now we are. And we got into it at our last meeting, and unfortunately, you know, it was one of those things that, well, now we'll postpone to find out if we exist after another couple months. But I think now that's what we're asking you to do.
Thank you. Thank you. I was on Representative Leonard's list to ask a question next, so even though I'm now temporary chair, I'll ask it. Could you tell me what kind of support you've had from the federal government and those agencies?
Chair Lee, members of the committee, the support has been strong and well offered, I'd say. I'd have to start with the fact that the federal government, at the governor's request 2 years ago, provided the startup funds for this entity. $850,000 is what it was, and that's what we've been running off mostly up until last fall, when we received additional support from the state. So from the get-go, they were there with dollars. I must also say that the representative on our board, Elaine Zielinski, has sort of epitomized a lot of the board's commitment to this process by being available in all sorts of ways to help provide in-kind staff services. Currently, we're co-located with the Bureau of Land Management Salem District Office in a rent-free situation that we pay our own way in terms of copying and stuff like that. We've had good working relationships with the various federal entities out there, the Willamette Province, PIKE, and the RIKE, which are regional interagency executive committees under the Northwest Forest Plan, that do a lot of environmental planning. We have good working relationships with the regulatory agencies as well, EPA and National Marine Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we've had strong federal support. I think that's also being shown in terms of support for the document that's before you. We will be asking for some written comments from federal agencies to invite them to say what they think about this, but I must say that in terms of verbal communication, we're hearing very positive things in terms of progress, in terms of a new kind of document that I think they have growing confidence in because of some of the maps, the tasks, the timelines. There is a federal, a growing sense of federal confidence in this kind of regional and local approach. So I hope to get that in writing for you, and of course, once I do, it would be widely shared with you.
I appreciate that, and I might follow up with saying that in the Klamath, Deschutes, and the Grand Ronde basins, they all started out similarly to WRI, and as part of a group that went to Congress on the Deschutes, we were subsequently able to get over $1 million a year from the federal government for each of those three basins, and I think that you could probably follow a similar process.
Chair Lee, that's one of the benefits, I think, of bringing this before this group and before you, too, I think, is to have benefit of that kind of experience. Certainly, there are a lot of commonalities regionally, and I did note that the formal and federal connection with some of the other groups was stronger than what we have here, maybe not stronger in terms of intent or collaborative partnerships, but stronger certainly in terms of I think funding mechanisms and review mechanisms.
Yeah. Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Lee, let me add one comment to your question. I think the important thing about WRI is that this has been a local, state, federal partnership from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Federal support and involvement, they have been at the table from the very beginning. They were there at the first meeting. They were there, in fact, in some cases, staffing. You know, some of the interim committees while we were drafting things and stuff like that. They've been there the whole time. They've been involved in the meetings. They've been involved in the drafting, the reviews, presentations to the boards, and so forth. It hasn't been just a state operation. It's been whoever was in Oregon was participating to some level as it involved the Willamette Basin. Representative Cruz.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'm somewhat conflicted here. You know, the original vision of the Oregon plan envisioned probably 8 to 12 watershed councils dealing with basins statewide as planning bodies. And from that perspective, this fits into that model. But at the same time, we've got an executive branch in the state that has encouraged the proliferation of watershed councils to where we now have over 90 of them. And, you know, so you know, it's how, I'm not quite sure how people go two directions at once, but that seems the way to be the way this executive branch is going. This has, WRI has, from the perspective of the other basins that have been working for a long period of time, it started out, and I think still does appear to be, a special interest that's getting preferential treatment. And in fact, it has. You know, no other basin in the state has got the support financially for the planning that this has, albeit it's certainly the biggest basin in the state and therefore is more complicated. You know, I have a problem with, we had a problem with this during the last session because this was the executive branch and it was done by the governor and that was it and then kind of after the fact, the legislator was added to it, and I'm not sure that necessarily buys me into the concept of validation after the fact, although we may do that, but I tell you where this is going to come down, it's a great book. It's a great book. It's basically the stuff that most of the larger watershed councils of the state have done. You know, they come up with the same sort of findings. But where this gets real dangerous, and it's something that you said, John, when you said that you have this magnificent group of highly intelligent people, and you've come up with some wonderful things that the rest of the state ought to do. Okay, and if you're calling, and if you and the Willamette Basin are going to tell the folks in the Umpqua that you're smarter and you know what to do better than they do, you're never going to get to this collaborative thing you're talking about. And that is the fear of something of this scale. It's kind of a God squad approach, and telling the rest of the state the error of their ways when we've got watershed councils that have been functioning very well for a long period of time with very little money. So there is a real danger here, and I understand the intention, John, but just in that statement you said, you're going to have disconnects right away if that's the approach you take.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, if I said that, I misspoke, and let me correct it and probably try again to say what I was saying. What we identified as some of the recommendations in this plan that fit the Willamette Basin, what I'm saying is that the same kind of recommendations might fit elsewhere as well. For example, to support SB 1010, that's a recommendation here. It fits the Willamette Basin, but it also fits everywhere else. I, as a member of the, you know, conservation districts, definitely want SB 1010 supported throughout the state, not just in the Willamette Basin. I do not think we were taking a position, and if I did, I apologize for having misspoken. I do not think we know what's best for everybody else. We're still struggling trying to figure out what's best for the Willamette Basin, and I happen to know some of the people live in other places of the state. They know what's best for their basin, and they know some things about us that we don't even know. We'd like to hear from them. So I think it's a matter of, well, I'll just say I apologize if I misspoke, because I had no intention of saying what you heard.
Okay. And I want to say, you know, there's a real danger here in that, and perception is a whole bunch of this. And you know, the perception out there is that this is a preferential body. You know, the Willamette Basin justifiably has been given things other basins haven't. And it's, I say justifiably because it's the biggest, most complicated basin in the state. And there needs to be real focus on it. But you go down to the rogue that's been struggling with limited resources for over a decade, and suddenly all this stuff's going here, and then, you know, this can be very critical, and you're right, we are at a critical period in this thing. I just think we need to be incredibly careful. You know, I think one of the things that you need to do, I mean, you've got a lot of functioning watershed councils and soil districts underneath WRI. That's the implementation level, and I mean, you guys need to be back here and be empowering more than anything, so.
Definitely. Mr. Chair, if I might respond to Representative Kruger, several years ago, I found myself in one of these hearings, and I was referring to the valley, and the chair, who wasn't from the Willamette Valley, asked me, Mr. Miller, which valley are you speaking of? And he was from a different valley. We have our noses in our own rivers, and we need to get up and look around.
You didn't say the valley, did you?
I did.
I mean, when he asked you which valley, you didn't say the valley.
I was still alive.
St. Leonard. Everybody knows the valley is the Umatilla.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
And I guess. So your point is very well taken. And part of the problem, I think, with the way this has evolved is that we didn't have legislative guidance from the get-go. And, you know, I guess I've been frustrated enough by that, and I know others have, but I don't care anymore how that happened. I guess what I'm hoping can happen is that you can help us get to where we need to be. We're focused on the Willamette. We're part of Oregon, and things are getting so much more complex as we move along, and it's my belief that the upland species are going to make the water-related species look like a picnic. In terms of the numbers that we're going to be dealing with and the complexity of those issues. And somehow we've got to get on the right track. And we can't do it with a token legislator, no matter how good they are. And you need to tell us, how do we fix this thing so that it is acceptable to you and we can move forward?
So there's one more follow-up. You were on that original group, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we had this wonderful thing in the test tube, and it's kind of evolved into different things. And it's been a frustration to me to watch an evolvement in one direction and different evolvements in another direction. And it's never kind of gone this way. Certainly I don't think any of us would say we're walking away from this, but I do think it is a time for some caution and some perspective on what we're doing.
Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I apologize for the question that I asked that prompted this statement or miscommunication. But I think Representative Cruz's reaction, inflammatory, it's exactly what I was talking about. And that's and I think that goes to show that there's probably a lot of work on legislators' part ourselves to make sure that we communicate amongst one another the importance of this plan, not only to the Willamette Valley, but not taking care of other basins' problems, but using it as a framework in solving those problems as well throughout the state.
Mr. Chair, point of correction. Representative, I haven't gotten inflammatory yet.
Mildly, I guess.
Not even mild.
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, with your permission, because we have touched on these regional bodies, and Representative Cruz, I think, made some very good points about the exchange that can happen between these bodies. I wonder if it would be appropriate for me to just hand out a working document I have on some regional bodies in Oregon. I'd like to do that if possible, while making the observation that as I went through here, I mean, I can see a lot of ways that we can, you know, we can take the GIS laboratory of the Tillamook and learn something from that. We can take the approach to stream flow restoration and the Deschutes Resource Conservancy and learn something from that. Take a look at what the people in the Rogue and Southwest Oregon have done in struggling mightily, and it looks like they're succeeding in finding ways to bring together the Clean Water Act and Endangered Species Act under the lead of some local water quality plans. There's a lot to learn from there. So I hope we don't leave you with the impression that, you know, we're here, we know what's best everywhere. That ain't the case. And so I would like to offer this as at least some sort of a beginning document of sort of an opportunity to learn from each other.
Thank you. Yes, other folks who are new to the process might believe that the Willamette has gotten special funding and special privilege, but I've been here a long time, and I know that the John Day got $500,000 from the state, and the Rogue got $500,000 from the state for watershed councils and organizations, and this is not at all a new thing. I was in the Deschutes 12 years, and they had a head start from the state as well as the federal government, so it's probably later in the process now that the Willamette has been able to achieve some equitable resources to some of the other regions. And I've subsequently talked with watershed councils up in my area, and they're interested in looking at this as being part of a process that will provide other services to them, like hopefully at some point we can get some folks who can help them with grants and do some of the things that aren't really productive to do singularly at the local level. So I really, again, support all you've done.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to address a couple comments. I think the issue about, you know, watershed councils and basin groups and Willamette Restoration Initiative and so forth is a question that, let's say, has been talked about so long, it's now time to start making some decisions about it. I have personally, for example, contacted people in the governor's office. I've talked to four or five other representatives of watershed councils and conservation districts, and two or three others who, such as the For the Sake of the Salmon, and some private consultants that are working with watershed councils, and have asked the question, isn't it time that we sit down and face some of the tough issues that we've been letting go by? I think we are facing some tough issues about what is the planning structure? What is the system for planning and implementation? How do we involve basin groups? How do we involve watershed councils? How do we involve, what are the roles of conservation districts vis-a-vis watershed councils and so forth? We've been at this business for 5, 6, 10 years in cases, and maybe we're now at the time where the stresses are getting to the point on funding and supports and so forth, and we need to make some decisions as to where we're going to go and how. And I would certainly invite the members of this committee to initiate and or certainly participate in a discussion that deals with those kind of issues with the kinds of members of governor's office and OWEB and Association of Conservation Districts and local representatives and other organizations and groups affected. Because I think they're out there and they're sort of simmering, and sometimes they're festering, and sometimes they're being shouted, and sometimes they're being ignored, but they're there. And they are affecting us out on the ground. They are affecting our local meetings of how we interact. We've got good models for how it can be done. We've got some questions that need to be answered, and I certainly hope that it will be brought up. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I want to thank you all for your good work. I haven't had a chance to read the entire document, but in perusing it, it's excellent, and I appreciate it. And I just want to say, I don't want to start developing a complex here any more than I already have, but it just seems like if you're from the Willamette area or the Portland area, I'm beginning to feel like you just can't win when those of us from Portland start some from Portland start saying, gee, we ought to do something around the state and in farming operations and whatnot. We're criticized for not working our own watershed. And then now that we are working on our own watershed, well, who do you guys think you are? You think you're smarter than we are? And, well, no. I think we're trying to focus on what it was people were telling us to focus on, our watershed. And I've taken that, I've honestly, in the last two sessions, taken that serious and have focused personally my efforts on the Willamette River, and specifically that part that exists in the city of Portland, because of the message I've heard from my colleagues, seriously. And I see you doing the same thing. And so I guess I'm a little bit not getting the connection of criticism leveled at you. I see you doing that, unless I'm missing something here. I see you saying, okay, we do have our own problems here in the valley we need to deal with. You have 27 action points here that specify what those are very specifically. And I'm looking at them and thinking, boy, this is going to be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow in Portland and Gresham. And I mean, and then I, my good friend from Southern Oregon lays into you, and I'm like, well, maybe I'm not seeing something here. I see it as doing what you have been advocating, getting us on board, doing what we should be doing, and taking care of our problems here, as well as asking other areas of the state to do that as well. So maybe I missed something in your critique, but
inflammatory part.
Okay. For me, I appreciate what you're doing, and I just know just what little bit I've involved in this stuff, how difficult it is. So.
Don't get me wrong, I do appreciate the work, and I know you guys, so but I do have two questions. First, Rick, is this kind of what conceptually you're looking at as decision levels for the state? I mean, the way you've got these broken out, or I'm just kind of basing, I mean, the reason I ask is because this gets a lot closer to what our vision of what a watershed council structure would look like originally, that it would be on a basin level like this for comprehensive look. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, I think there's probably a subconscious bias toward that on my part, looking at the major river basins. I have to admit, though, that in putting this document together, I just sort of did a mental inventory of what I thought the regional bodies were, and I found a map, and I put arrows on it. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but I do think that there's a nature's fingerprint is here. We've got our major river basins. I know the governor's office has been looking at regional, the development of regional bodies somewhat along these lines. So I think it's certainly a construct to continue thinking about.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, this follow-up. I mean, this is a lot closer to my vision than anything we've seen. So, but one more question. I noticed, for example, when you're listing endangered and threatened species, you have the lynx listed, which I think is listed as threatened in Oregon because it's part of a larger region, even though there's no lynx in the state. So I'm wondering, at some point in time, is WRI kind of looking at maybe challenging some of the assumptions behind science? And I use the lynx, but I'm thinking more of temperature.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, that turns out to be a fairly big question. I think what we find is that when we do have a platform to start talking to each other about these issues, clarification opportunities present themselves. Information, data is important. And whether you're talking about the lynx or cutthroat trout, whether they're a part of a, you know what happened in the EMCLA about listing, delisting, I can't predict what would happen with regard to any particular species, but I do know that it's only through partnerships and by being clear about the framework for environmental protection that, one, you can get to agreement about what's actually endangered, and two, then moving on collaborative ways to fixing the problem. So I think we have a framework for better dealing with those questions, and I don't know a lot about the lynx or whether it's been totally extirpated or whether there are a few hanging on. We got our information, as you might guess, from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on that point. In terms of temperature, boy, there's a big issue. And I do note that there is a task force at work about the temperature standard. And I think if there's any ethic that this board has promulgated, it has to do with being clear about your facts. And I'm not sure that all the facts are in yet about temperature. And it's unfortunately one of those ongoing discussions that's going to take a lot of energy, a lot of attention to make sure we get right scientifically. And we've had good luck in working with some science advisors, and we look forward to that if we should continue.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Isn't this just simply the map that the Water Resources Department has of the 19 basins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, that.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
That could be a starting point.
Yes, definitely is one.
I have questions. Thank you very much for your presentation.
I guess a question that I would have, I don't think it's that provocative, maybe that we need to write it down, what is the first thing you'd like to have the legislature do on your Christmas tree?
Mr. Chair, in deference to the people that have worked hardest on it, I offered that to the board members here. Get first crack, and then I would offer something.
I would ask that you look at our recommendation as to what the structure of WRI ought to be or how we implement this strategy and tell us what you think. And then fund whatever entity you think is best to implement the strategy. And it doesn't mean that this group is going to do all these things, but it is a group that can look at these big areas and say, here's how we might handle that Willamette big area and how it also might relate to the others. So I think it's, you know, give a specific input on what you think is wrong or right with this and then help us move forward to fund whatever needs to be done.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as a single board member, not speaking for all of them, of course we never did it that case. I would like to see the, this is a loaded term, legitimation, the authorization for the WRI to continue to come through the legislation. I would like to have the funding to continue RIC or whatever, you know, staff and so forth in some kind of a formal body that would continue this. I think the important thing to note about this is it would be a travesty if this thing stopped right now. We're just getting started. We've just got a document. I mean, that was the easy part. You know, the discussions that are going on are the tough ones, like what Representative Cruz comes up with. You can better believe that we continue and so forth. At least the representative of the OECD is going to bring up the temperature issue. We have a recommendation. One of the 27 is to support and get those, you know, TMDLs up. But there are some problems with them. And they're just trying to get them done in gross form right now. We haven't even got to the fine-tuning and the research necessary to do the specific, site-specific type stuff that's necessary. And there's already studies and, you know, going on to that are refuting things like temperature standards. So you better believe those kind of questions are going to come up. So we need to continue. Our work is not done. And we hope that we will come through the legislature, we will come through the budget, and we will come through with a link to the ongoing process of working with y'all, you know, between sessions and from now on.
Sorry to ask another question. That Rick had testified about House Bill 3638 is possibly coming before this committee, and I was just going to say for Representative Cruz's interest before he left that's a bill that looks at developing basin councils generically statewide, not just a WRI bill, so that any basin would have the same opportunity.
Did you wish to comment, Rick?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that I could add substantively to what my board members have said, but I think it boils down to things that we'd like from you in our Christmas tree. I think there are three ornaments. One is your counsel. Two is if you see merit in what we're doing, then implement it. And we hope that in that implementation, we can find permission from you, authorization to, in some form, continue a regional body to sort of keep the momentum up.
And thank you.
You see why we like him?
Thank you very kindly.
Thank you
for this opportunity.
My hope is that we have a little smoother communication route.
Thank you.
Anything else for the
you've got some announcements to make.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you have in addition to materials that pertain to the topics discussed today are a document that says Native Fish Conservation, a management approach for Oregon with draft stamped in the upper right-hand corner. Please take a minute to look at that. ODFNW is going to present this material at our meeting on Monday. And it is in reference to the wild fish policy that the Fish Division has been working on. There's some color graphics, et cetera, et cetera. And right behind that is a fax that the committee received yesterday of National Marine and Fisheries press release that's approving the innovative salmon plan that is making some reference to some of these works, the work outlined in this document also. So these are for Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other item? Return.